I know you're broken hearted, cause the piece you're hoping for is off the scenes apart.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to We Love No Other Podcast from IlliniBoard.com. I am Robert Rosenthal, your host. My guest this evening is Mr. Bob Zupke. So this is another Robert and Bob podcast. Bob, how are you this evening?
I am doing well. Thanks for having me.
All right, here's the plan. We haven't even talked about this. Like, I didn't even tell you what I want to talk about. We sit here, let's see, we're recording this on November 30th. We sit here with an 8-4 football team. And we sit here with this 8-4 football team. You know, we did this last year, right? We did this, right after the season, we went back and forth and figured out that we believe that that was the 7th best Illinois football season. Where did we draw the line? I don't remember.
I think we did. Was it like last 30 years or something like that?
Yeah, since like 1990 maybe. Yeah. Anyway, I'm not interested in doing that. Here's what I want to do. We've been at this a while. We've been obsessing over teams for a while. I saw some tweet today saying that it was Kendrick Jones' 40th birthday today. You know, it was Mike Pearson, the guy who, old SID, who puts birthdays, yeah, Illini birthdays out there. So, you know,
shout out Shontez.
Yes,
Shontez.
Shontez all those years ago. Illini board history. So, you know, here we are, you know. I've been doing the thing all day of just defending Chase Brown and him being second team and all that, and we'll get into that. But you know, this is our I started school in 1991. Okay, we have had 3 seasons with 8 or more regular season wins since I started school.
Yep,
we only had 7 wins in 99. We got the 8th win in the bowl game. So it is 2001, it is 2007, and it is 2022. So I just want to have a conversation with two people who have been through this a while, me a little longer than you because I'm about, I'm like 10 years older than you or something, probably more than that. But I just want to have this conversation of, here we are, you know.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to wrap my brain around it. 8-4 is nobody understands. It's happened 3 times the last 31 years, 8 regular season wins. And
yeah.
I just want you and I to go back and forth and talk about what this season was like. So I'll let you go first. Like, where are you at? I mean,
yeah,
it's such a weird season because we lost 3 in a row and we were thinking, oh my God, is a playoff in play and all this stuff. So, you know, where are you at after this season?
Yeah, I mean, so obviously with the season over, it's easy to kind of the entire body of work and be, you know, elated with how it wound up versus how it started. I think that's the interesting thing about every time Illinois has a good season. It's usually out of nowhere, or it usually, you know, even 2007, it was like, all right, we're going to be pretty good, I think, but we didn't really have any reason to actually believe that.
Yep.
You know, we had some good recruits that came in and all of that. And, you know, you had the Laymans and the Millingtons and those guys who were upperclassmen, and you thought you had a chance to be good, but I don't think you expected Rose Bowl good. I mean, this year Vegas opens at 3.5, moves to 4.5, but you're still just like, I mean, still out of nowhere. You know, I don't think even like the most optimistic person would have expected anything close to this.
Yes.
So at the end of the day, if you look at the entire body of work, you look at the expectations that, you know, that I had going into, that I think you had going into this year, that 99.9% of Illini fans had going into this year. And you can't have a feeling other than just like joy when thinking about this season.
Yep.
Now, whenever you get into the, you know, I think that's big picture. I think there's gonna be a lot of what ifs that will like always define this season for me. But you know, if you look at total body of work, it's just like one of those, like, this is why, you know, you put up with the 63-0s against Iowa and, you know, the just Tim Beckmans and the Levy Smiths and the Bill Cubits and all of that is for like a season like this.
Yep. You're right. I mean, not only are there two ways to look at this season. One is the overview. No Illinois fan on earth could be upset at 8-4. The other is, oh dear Lord, 23 seconds away from beating Indiana, 9 seconds away from beating Michigan. In every single game, shot yourself in the foot against Purdue and Michigan State. Switch some things around here, and we could be talking about 11-1, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's such a bizarre season. Excuse me. It's such a bizarre season because of that. Because it's there's a part of my brain that is, there is no way I could be upset. Yet you can't describe to me a scenario where in the second year of Brett Bielema, Illinois goes 8-4. You cannot come up with a scenario where I would be upset. And then we played a thing where we played a series where I'm sitting there after the Purdue game, shooing people away who were trying to come up and give me a hug because I am devastated to a level I didn't think I could reach. And I'm sitting there talking into the mic and saying, okay, we're going to lose to Michigan. And then what if we lose to Northwestern? And oh my God. And you know, I'm at the lowest point. So you couldn't even describe to me a scenario before the season that I could get to there, but that's how this season played out. Right.
Yeah. I mean, some of the discourse actually after the Purdue loss sort of pissed me off because I would see people. I mean, I was with you. I was devastated. I mean, I don't remember an Illinois football loss that like I was as upset about as that Purdue game. And I'd get onto, you know, Twitter or whatever and see people like, you know, Illinois fans are so unreasonable. No one could have expected this good of a season. And like, why don't you just be happy with like where you're at and that kind of thing. And it's almost like if I walked up to you and said, here's $100, you don't have to do anything for this $100. But if you can add 10 plus 10, I'll give you $1,000. And you said 19. It's not that you'd be pissed off that like, it's not like, hey, I didn't want that. You know, I'm not mad that I'm left with a free $100, but all I had to do was freaking beat Purdue to get the $1,000. And I didn't. And like, I'm going to be upset about that. And so like, that's kind of where I, you know, I mean, expectations change. And whenever you're faced with, you know, you just beat Purdue, just beat Michigan State. And like, you got to change. Like, I don't know. I mean, the way that it ended did leave a bad taste in my mouth, but that Purdue game will haunt me.
Yep. It's interesting to me. And again, there's two things we're talking about. And like you said, on Twitter, they cross so many times to where I will get upset with somebody that is so overly negative because I'm looking like big picture of the season, but then I will tweet something after the Purdue law, or I'll tweet something about how I'm devastated and people are like, hey, I thought you were the guy who were so, you can't be upset about this. Well, like there's two things, right? There is the no Illinois fan can be mad at 8-4 and this is a glorious season and we will look back on it fondly. And we left some things on the table. And leaving Indy and you having to cancel that flight you sent me the screenshot of, like, those are hard, hard things. You know, to not, I'm okay and I'm in a really good mood with 8-4 and I'm all wrapped up in bowl possibilities and everything else. But it still hurts that some of the, and especially since, you know, they, if the refs call that pick play, we beat Michigan. You know, there's so many different emotions involved in all of this that it's hard to sort through it all in how we look back on this season.
And I think a lot of it is just the nature of being an Illinois football fan, because you reach these peaks and every single time there's a valley coming after. And I think we're just that, like, that is what we're conditioned to believe is going to happen, you know? And so I will feel a lot differently about this season if we win 7 or 8 games again next year, right? Like, it won't be like, I won't have that bad taste in my mouth about Purdue. Like, that won't hurt as much. Because it won't be like, oh God, I'm going to have to wait another 20 years for us to contend for a Big Ten championship. And I mean, after 2001, there was a letdown. After 2007, there was a letdown. So to me, like, the Illinois fan in me braces for the letdown next year, but it does feel different. And I've said this before, but it just feels different. Like, this 8-4 feels different because it felt like, this is an 8-4, and with like a little bit of luck, it's a 10-2.
Yep. And I wouldn't even say, I would slightly alter that and say without bad luck. You know, it wouldn't take luck to get to 10-2. It would take not having this bad luck. You know, in Connolly's stat, the second order wins and the, you know, post game win expectancy, we're going to come out of the season as one of the 10 unluckiest teams. This was, you know, I think it's at 9.7 win expectancy and we won 8 games. Or maybe it's 9.3. I'll have to look it up. But point being is we left some things on the table. And again, that's the type of thing that has two ways to talk about it. And I want to get into that. So let's look at this season versus like 2001. Okay, so
yep.
2001, everybody thinks of fondly. We in the regular season we go 10-1. We go 7-1 in the Big Ten. Our only loss is at Michigan, and we were let's be honest, we were blown out in that game.
Yeah.
But we won the Big Ten. You know, Michigan lost the last weekend to Ohio State. They fall to 6-2 in the Big Ten. We won it outright, our first outright in forever, and our last Big Ten title that we had. And it's remembered fondly. I wrote last week how, or early this week, how numbers-wise, you know, if we go with – you know, for the article, I was using Bill Connolly's SP Plus ratings, which are kind of independent of any wins or losses. It just looks at, did you do the things that good football teams do, and how many games should you have won when you do those things? And for this season, it shows it, you know, statistically better than 2001. Now, you say that to a fan, I was like, better than 2001? We're 10-1. This was 8-4. Totally different. Okay. Yeah. But let's look at what you did. So I'm just going to go through the 2001 season real quick, okay? Because people forget, early in the 2001 season, we had a nail-biter over Northern Illinois.
Northern.
We won 17-12. and, you know, the rest of the season was really, really close games. There was that Wisconsin game that Brandon Lloyd catch in the, you know, the famous photograph. We won that 42-35. I mean, I was just talking with somebody about that play before the season of if there was instant replay, it's one of those, is it a catch, is it not a catch things, because his toe comes down in bounds, but his heel lands out of bounds, and it happens fairly quickly. So his toe hits first in bounds, but then as his heel comes down, it's out of bounds. If there was replay at the time, that play would have looked at over and over and over, and you say, well, his toe is in before the heel, but he didn't really get his whole foot down, and it would have been debated and debated. Anyway, it was a touchdown. Illinois wins by 7. And then there's that Penn State game a few weeks later where we were trailing most of the game, and then the little Rocky Harvey hurdle over the Penn State guy, and he scores with like 2 minutes left, and we win that game 33-28. And then the final game, Northwestern, was another nail biter where Northwestern wasn't that good. We're ranked 10th at that time. We played Northwestern at home and won 34-28, where we were, you know, trying to hold them off at the end. Well, I guess they scored. It wasn't a harrowing thing, but when you're about to wrap up the Big Ten and you only beat Northwestern by six at home, it was not what everybody was expecting. Everybody was expecting a blowout. So
yeah, a lot of one score games. And Northwestern won like four games that year.
Yes,
so they were bad.
Yes, the losses were blown out by Michigan, blown out by LSU. So you played you played two ranked teams, and when you played those two ranked teams, you got destroyed. But other than that, you played and you won. So when you look at
this, was Purdue ranked? I thought Purdue was ranked that year. Maybe not.
Let's see. Yes, you are correct. Purdue was 20th when we played them. They finished 6-6. Finished 6-6, but you're right. They were ranked.
Young Kyle Orton, I believe. Yeah, freshman Kyle Orton.
That was that game where we finally got ranked. And then went to Purdue and won big. Comparing that to this season, where we played four close games. Those four close games were at Indiana, Iowa at home. I guess it was five close games, five one-score games. Michigan State at home, Purdue at home, which... asterisk, we kicked a field goal with 20 seconds left to make it a one-score game. And then Michigan. And the other games we won going away. You know, nothing was really close at all. Seven of the eight wins, the entire fourth quarter we were running clock. The only win where we weren't just trying to run the clock out and up by 15 or 20 or 25 in the fourth quarter was Iowa, and we know how that one ended, and there was no DeVito in the Sitkowski interception at the one and blah, blah, blah. But here's my point of going through all of that. There are five close games in – five one-score games this year, and we won one of them.
Yeah, 1-4.
And there were four one-score games in 2001, and we won all of them.
Yep.
And here we enter the other way to talk about football. We, as fans, will zero in on single moments in some of those games. We will look at Indiana and be like, my God, if we just punch it in from the two, that game is over, and we put it away, and we're not even talking about this. We could go to the Iowa game and be like, if there's no instant replay, and if Sitkowski's elbow isn't down a fraction of a second before that ball comes out, we lose the Iowa game. One score games are just those razor margins, and that's really where seasons hinge. Big picture, overall. Two great teams, 01 and 22. The difference is really, I don't want to say luck, but I just want to say fortune.
Yeah.
Hightower's touchdown wasn't good against Indiana, but Brandon Lloyd's touchdown Wisconsin was. Rocky Harvey scores with 2 minutes left, and then we stuff Penn State and stifle their drive. Michigan still got into field goal range and kicked the winning field goal with 9 seconds left.
God, you're so right.
These games, it's just, this was 2001 again. It's just on these razor thin moments, things either go great or bad. And it's, we love to blame the coaches. We love to zero in on, oh God, what a horrible second down call. And why weren't we throwing? And, we love to and it's for sports, right? We focus in and we get on this, but really it's kind of, look, the world's greatest example of this is the man who was living with a horseshoe. I can't say. Pat Fitzgerald was living the luckiest life imaginable, winning one score game after one score game. People who track these stats are like, I've never seen anything like statistically, this doesn't happen. Every Northwestern fan is like, this guy is the best. He just knows how to win. No, it's not how it works. You get really, really fortunate, or you get really, really unfortunate like Scott Frost. It just happens. If you're in close games, yes, there can be chokers, and yes, there can be people who step up. But it's just more or less over time, you're going to win half of them, you're going to lose half of them. That's it. And we watched Pat Fitzgerald be lucky in 2018. We watched him be lucky in 2020. And now it's all come home to roost of like, they played a bunch of one-score games this year and lost them all. Like, all of this is starting to fall apart for him. I'm like, oh, wait, these are just averages coming back and coming to that. And so that's my feeling toward this season. Overall is that, man, 5 one-score games and we lost 4 of them. Does it mean we're chokers? I don't really think so. I really look at this as, man, we were so close. I'm sorry. I'll let you talk in a bit. I'm sorry. This is my rant.
I am with you.
You know, 94 was kind of a choke kind of season. Just because we had a 21-0 lead on Penn State at home. All we had to do was stop them in the fourth quarter. We gave up a 94-yard drive and a 96-yard drive to lose. We had like an 11-point lead, and we give up 2 90-plus yard drives to lose with 30 seconds left. Ken Dilger's tackled at the 1 by a Purdue defensive back, and we lose that game. All he has to do is lean forward and get into the end zone. We miss a field goal to beat Washington State when we had no business losing to Washington State that year. You know, that 94 was this like, oh, dear God, why didn't this team, you know, close the deal when they had the chance to close the deal? But they also played some one-score games that they won. Anyway, my overall point is this season was 2001. It's just the things just didn't go. 8-4 is great, and I would have loved to see these other things because every other stat points to this was probably a 9, 10, or 11-win team that just happened to win 8 games.
Yeah, and does that make you feel better or worse?
Both. On the side of overall where the program's at, damn it, we have a top 10 team this year. This is one of the 10 best teams in college football. On the side of me, the fan, wanting to celebrate at a huge bowl game and maybe even make one of the New Year's Six bowls, it's devastating to like think back on like, oh God, a field goal with 9 seconds left, a touchdown with 23 seconds left. Like it, we got to the Michigan State, 23 installed and couldn't punch it in. Like, you know, so much that could have been something. So both sides of the argument, you know, I have these different reactions to it.
It feels more sustainable, though.
Yes.
Right? Like,
yes.
Because it just feels like, all right, like one of these years, it's going to be 2001 again. Yep. And we're just going to come out on the other side.
Yes. And I say this to people. You know, I've said this to people so many times. Name an Illinois season where you were in every game. You can't because this is the first one of our lifetime.
Yeah.
We were in every single game, including Michigan.
Yep.
83, that didn't happen. 89, that didn't happen. 99, that didn't happen. 01, that didn't happen. 07, that didn't happen. There were blowout losses in all of those seasons, including the ridiculous Rose Bowl and the ridiculous Missouri game in 83. And here we are with a season where we could have won every single game.
Yeah, I mean, I guess 2007, I guess Mizzou was the blowout.
Well, I mean, I'm USC.
Yeah.
We haven't played our bowl game here. I'm saying that we're going to get paired up with LSU in the Citrus Bowl and lose by 61 or something.
I guess that's my only concern.
Let me see. Yes.
Because even Mizzou, I think, wound up being a one-score game, but it was pretty much Mizzou the whole time.
Yes, that was the we forced that fumble by the sideline, and it stayed in bounds, and we scored. And then we got the ball. I think they went 3 and out, and we scored, and we made it close. Yeah, you're right. 40-34, 10-6, And then 27-17, which was a game that was
the Kyle Hudson fumble.
Yeah, Kyle Hudson fumble made it a 10-point game. Yeah.
Yeah.
I probably shouldn't count the Rose Bowl as the game we weren't in.
don't do it yet.
Yes, because we still haven't had our bowl game.
Exactly.
But there is I guess you're right. If we look at that regular season, we were in every game. There were, you know, it's weird to look back now because Penn State was a one score game. Wisconsin the following week was a one score game. Then Iowa was a one score game. You know, I tell people this all the time. Ball State that year. We had lost to Iowa. Yeah. We'd lost to Michigan. Ball State in the fourth quarter has the ball. I think they're down 21-17. They have the ball at our 9 or something. And they're going in to take the lead. And we get like 2 sacks and they miss the field goal and then we drive and score and win the game. So go ahead.
I mean I think this team is this team better than that 2017? I think they probably are. At least in terms of level of competition that they were playing. They were better than the competition whenever you compare 2007 to the competition they were playing.
Yes. Yes. You know, the Ohio State win is very similar to this Michigan loss. You know, second to last game, you're going toe to toe with a national championship contender. In that one, we get the 2 picks and we pull it off late.
Yeah, or you know, if they call a pick play in Michigan, we win. If Daniel Dufresne, if they call the fumble, we probably lose.
Yes.
So
yes,
and it probably was a fumble.
definitely was.
You know, and and so
yes,
yeah. I mean, it just goes back to kind of your point.
Yeah,
like one or two plays.
Yes. The overall thing here is, as you mentioned, where we're at as a program. We have always asked for a football team that's just competitive. Just be competitive. Not only competitive, but competitive every game. And probably a little unlucky in that in our 5 one-score games, we went 1-4. You know, historically, you're either going to go 2-3 or 3-2 in those games, and we just didn't because a few things didn't go our way. If you want to say those few things that didn't go our way were all Barry Lunney's fault, that's fine. If you want to say we should have called, you know, we needed, you know, I've said this before this season, we didn't have that, what I call the Matt Bailey package in place for the Indiana game. I believe that the Matt Bailey 4 safety package, where Kanenna Odaluga comes in as a pass rusher, that package didn't exist against Indiana, and if we had it in the you know, we went just to like a dime defense and looked a little lost during that series. You know, had we had that package set up, we maybe stop Indiana there and win that game, you know. So there's stuff you can even put on Ryan Walters, or you can put on Bielma, or you can put on Lunney as to, man, this is on the coaches that we didn't do this. But again, you know, Indiana has little things, and there's the high tower catch, and there's the this, and there's the that. You know, it's just going to come down to those tiny little things. Michigan comes down to one referee looking at a pick play, reaching for his flag, thinking, if I throw this, I decide who's in the playoff, and deciding not to throw it. And, you know, it just didn't go our way. But we're still a competitive football program, and it's all we've ever wanted.
Forever.
Yes.
And what are your thoughts on Bielema going after twice on social media?
It was cutting up there, so just for the audio.
Oh, sorry.
Go ahead and ask your question again.
So what are your thoughts on Bielema going after the refs on social media twice?
I like it. I believe it to be choose my words carefully here. I believe it to be an intentional play where it's not so much about I'm mad and I'm going to go after the refs as it is I'm going to make noise because Illinois can't be disrespected like this.
Yeah.
That's my take. He hasn't, like, talked to him about this. There's no, like, I'm not offering inside information. My feeling is his social media attempt to say, respect this team. Don't call 16 penalties in the Purdue game. Don't give Michigan every call in the final drive.
Yeah.
You know, like, what's working against us is what's always worked against us, and what worked against Chase Brown today, and what worked against everything else of, oh, it's Illinois, you know? Like,
yep.
You know, there were voters today looking at a Minnesota tailback, the Michigan tailback, and the Illinois tailback. Well,
yeah,
Illinois football doesn't really have many fans. If I leave him off, I'm not going to hear it from many people. Like, there's no backlash from that. So I'll go with the other two guys, you know?
Yep.
So my take on what Bielema's been doing is an attempt to get us back right with, hey, this is a team to be respected and not dealt with and dismissed in that way.
Yeah. God, I absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
I loved it. Yeah.
Why? Tell me why you loved it.
I loved it. It was so refreshing. You know, I've said this about Underwood a million times. One of the reasons I love Underwood is because, like, I am like a psycho whenever I watch the games. Like, I watch him, and I'm like, if I were a coach, like, I'm doing that in my living room.
Yes.
And that's what he's doing on the side.
Yes.
And, like, so, like, I know it is eating him alive every bit as much, and more than it's eating me alive that they're losing, or that they're not playing well, or whatever's going on. Like, that he just embodies that for me.
1,000%.
And to see, to go from an entire tenure of Lovie Smith just so stoic on the sidelines, not saying he doesn't care. I know he cares. And, like, I knew he cared. And every coach who stands on the sidelines cares. But to see Bielema react the way that, like, 99.99% of fans react, to me was amazing. Like, it was so refreshing to see that. And then to see the fans of other schools, like, being like, oh, come on, blah, blah, blah. Nothing pisses me off more than that, because, like, there are entire fan bases who just, like, dedicate themselves to complaining about referees, like, for months on end.
Yeah.
And then you have actually a coach who steps out and does the exact same thing, and you're going to criticize the guy for that. Like, to me, it's just like, we should all be celebrating this. I thought it was amazing.
Yes.
And not only that, but it changes sort of the narrative of, kind of like you talked about, you know, we're not just going to roll over. Like, we are going to make a stir about this because we got screwed, and we got screwed multiple times.
Yes.
So I absolutely loved it. I had no doubts about Bielema, but those, any lingering doubts were erased with that. Like, I'm just like, man, who wouldn't want to play for this guy?
Yep. Yep. And I don't know if you just said this word or if it's just coming to my mind. It is an embodiment of our fan base.
Totally.
Like, you know, I'm just thinking of how we are online, and how, you know, like, something that Jeff Goodman will say during basketball season or whatever, you know, just of, like, good Lord, these Illinois fans, like, come on. I mean, they're insane. Like, what?
Yes.
Like, these people are in my DMs and in my mentions. Like, you expect it from a large basketball, you don't really expect it from Illinois, kind of thing, you know. You know, that for our coaches to somewhat embody that culture is exciting for me.
I love it and I
agree in the, you know, Underwood doesn't use social media like that, but I agree that, you know, Underwood uses press conferences like that, and, you know, he's very calculated and very, you know, I was just saying this, God, I feel like I just said it on a podcast. No, I just said it on the radio this week. So, Underwood's press conference after the after Chin left and after Antigua left for Kentucky, and then Gentry went to Gonzaga, and there was this whole, like, oh, God, it's happening. It's all falling apart again and this and that. And Underwood had a Zoom press conference, and he had just the best answer of saying, I don't care. I'm going to do it again. Like, he took it himself. Like, I put together a staff that everybody wanted. Good for me. Watch this. I'm going to do it again. You know, and, and it was the perfect response in that moment. Because even the fan base was, you know, we were fickle at the time. Well, we're still fickle. But, like, you know, we were quite prone to, oh, as soon as a good thing happens, something bad will happen. And now we're, you know, it's going to kill me to see Kofi suiting up for Kentucky next year and all this stuff, you know, and like there were fans jumping off buildings and everything else. And you had a coach who just stepped up and said, no, excuse me, I put that stuff together and I'm going to do it again. And, you know, that's, you and I know what the experience of being an Illinois fan is like. And to have coaches do these things is like, dear God, that is good stuff. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. I've been waiting 20 years for somebody to, you know, to take these situations and treat them like that. It's so, so good.
They both just walk that level of, it's not arrogance, but it's just like so much confidence that like you just believe everything they say.
Yep.
You know? And yeah, the Bielema stuff was literally like I have your back, all of you. I hear all of you, and I agree with you. And he fired a tweet, and I absolutely loved it.
Yep, yep, yeah. And it's the kind of thing that, you know, I've been talking a lot about this off season. Of we haven't gone into an off season like this since, you know, 2007, 2008 of where, regardless of what happens in the bowl game, you know, it's not some, do we have a winning season or a losing season based on the bowl game? That's been our last, what, four bowl experiences, all 6-6 seasons.
Yep.
And we have this chance for momentum of, you know, regardless of roster changes, we have this kind of confidence of like, hey, we had a bunch of roster changes this year and look where we're at. I mean, obviously you're going to lose Spoon and, you know, you're going to lose a lot of these big time guys. So yeah, it might be a step back next year, but you have this confidence going into recruiting season, going into transfer season, everything else of, hey, we're back and you need to pay attention to us. And that's, I'm more excited for this offseason than, gosh, than I've been. It just feels different. It feels different than 07. Yeah. It feels different than all these other things because there's this certain, there's certain confidence that comes with doing this in year two when every other coach did it in year three and Lovey did it in year four. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I don't know if this is actually true. I mean, maybe I've like worked this narrative up in my head, but it feels like Bielema is a good coach to have in the transfer portal era only because it feels like the culture he's built at Illinois will keep kids around more so. Like I look at like Mizzou, right? And like Drinkwitz will crush it in the portal this year, I'm sure. But just like he did last year. But you see like his top players leaving, or you see like the guys who, you know, we all, oh God, like they landed Travion Ford and they landed Tyler Macon and they like, you know, those guys are gone. Like it just feels like the program that Bielema's building and the culture that's being built here makes us less susceptible to that sort of thing. And I don't know if that's actually true. You know, I mean, I maybe I've worked that up in my head.
No, I think
but
you're
it
right.
Just feels like you can convince the lineman who's redshirting that by his junior year, you know, he'll see the field and he's fine with that. And like there, you know, there's transparency and there's honesty and all of that kind of thing. And like, it feels like it's going to be different. But I guess we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, I'm choosing my words carefully again. It is a different vibe than, like, how do I don't even know how to say this. After 2007, okay, the 2008 spring game. I don't know if you went, but there were 15,000 people, 12,000 people there. It was as packed as any spring game I've ever attended, okay? And it makes sense, right? You're coming off the Rose Bowl. You still have Juice. You still have Aurelius Benn. You have these superstars. You have Martez Wilson. You have this team that just went to the Rose Bowl, and everything is perfect and fine and great and good. And because of that, you know, we go into the next season and we're ranked, and we go to Penn State on national TV in the night game in September. And, you know, we just all had this like feeling of like we're back. And then we had the 5-6 season, and or 5-7 season, and we lose to Western Michigan in Detroit, and we lose our final three to miss a bowl. And, you know, and like the fan base was like, what happened? Like, we were still like rolling and happy and partying and just feeling like, okay, it's here. You know, this feels like this, like, completely different. Not that I'm not confident, and not that this is a bad thing. It's just like, oh, wait, they know what winning football is, you know?
Yeah.
Zook found a sophomore quarterback. He inherited Mendenhall, had to re-recruit him, but, you know, inherited Mendenhall because his brother came here the year before. He went out and he found Vontae, and he found Regis, and he found Tez, and, you know, and it all came together with that Turner class, and just when Jay Lehman's a senior and Martin O'Donnell's a senior and everything, you know, and Millington comes over and he plugs the hole we were missing, and we bring, you know, switch X from the defense to the offense, yep. And he fits perfect at left tackle, and, you know, all just fits together, and boom, it's there. But that it felt like it just, you know, especially with what we saw afterwards, that was kind of this like, it just kind of fell into place. It wasn't really intentional because they couldn't replicate it. After what we saw last year with the 5-7 season, it was very close to 6-6. After we saw this year with an 8-4 season, it was very close to 10-2. It just feels like there's this competence of, look, we know what winning football looks like. We know what winning football players looks like. If we know we don't have defensive tackles behind Randolph and Newton, we will go find them in the portal this spring, you know?
Yep.
It's this very confident, look, we know what this defense does. It, like, I don't know why you would question this. We've proven this before. We have this great staff. We're going to do it again. And I don't think I've ever felt that, you know, when Turner spiked in 2001, when Zook spiked in 2007, it felt like these, like, perfect storm seasons, and these last two seasons have felt like competence. Of course we're going to be in the Michigan game because we know what wins football games.
It so just feels like the floor is so much higher.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because you have competence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's very close to, I don't know. Is it the same feeling as Underwood after he built the culture? I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's similar. I think the only thing that's different is with just, it's hard to compare basketball to football because you get one guy in basketball and it changes everything.
Yep.
And here it's just like, it feels like culture is so much more of like a, it makes more of a difference in football than it does in basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Underwood's an exception to that, but I mean, you can get, you know, four really good freshmen and bring them in, and if they're good, they're, you know, they'll win a bunch of games in basketball.
Yep.
Football is just a grind. Yeah. And it just feels like there's a lot of guys over there that genuinely know what they're doing,
mm-hmm.
which just brings the floor up higher than it's ever been.
So I wrote about culture last night with the basketball game, and I just want to read. Tyler went in the comments, Tyler went and dug out something he wrote after the 12-21 season, after Io's freshman year when we went 12-21. I'll just read the whole thing. I'll just read Tyler's comment and then the quote. He said, "I covered the season ending and school record 21st loss to Iowa in the 2019 Big Ten tournament. I dug up my postgame article and found this blurb." And this is what Tyler wrote back in 2019. "Afterwards, Underwood reaffirmed that this season was successful in his primary goal, establishing the culture, which he felt was so sorely lacking." Now, this is Underwood quote. "I'm not concerned about the record," he said in the postgame press conference. "This year was about establishing an identity and a culture, and that's the way I approached it." And Tyler's comment now is, it seems like his efforts were well justified. I think that's the thing that has me the most encouraged here, is that I feel like Bielma approaches this the same way. I'm building a culture here. You know, everything that tweets these days is like, we're only getting started. You know, yes, this was the most players on a Big Ten, all Big Ten players that we've ever had in our team history. Well, that's the new norm now, you know, like expect more of this kind of thing. And I think him selling that message is really, really smart. And it's just so good that, you know, that Underwood went about that season. I mean, look, like Mark Smith out the door, six other players transferred after that first season. We were only left with four guys. We bring in Io and Georgie, and you know, we're playing all these freshmen, and it looks like a disaster. And that was Underwood after that season. Like, I'm not trying to go to the tournament here. I'm trying to build a sustainable basketball program. And to do that, we had to clean house, start over, find the guys who are my kind of guys, like Trent and DeMonte. I keep them around. I add guys like Feliz, and we start to build where this thing is going. And so that's the thing that has me so encouraged about all this, is because it feels like Bielma is approaching this the same way of like, look, we're slowly turning over the roster. We found the guys we wanted to keep. We had 35, 40 some guys leave over the last 18 months. You know, that were just like not the fits for what we're trying to do. We went to the portal to find culture fits. Guys like, you know, he talked about Terrell Jennings all year of like, look, we found this guy at Minnesota State that was a culture fit, and I wish he wouldn't have got injured because he was really playing well. He was really pushing Taz for playing time. And, you know, that's how they're going about it. They're not going out and be like, oh, let's get the other five-star from Texas or wherever, you know, whatever the star, you know, they went to get Tommy DeVito because that's the culture fit and that's what they want. Yep. And that's the specific thing they're going after. When they're in the portal, they're not, you know, they're not trying to do all this other stuff. So that's why I'm so encouraged.
Yep. Yeah. I was just going to go there with the Jonah Moore, Terrell Jennings, like, you know, they're not chasing the five-star kid who, you know, has some attitude problem and didn't get enough playing time and whatever. And to me, like that sort of embodies the direction of this program.
Yes. Yes. And I think you see it in recruiting as well. I was reading some stuff yesterday on the, how do you pronounce his name? Mason Merrigan.
I don't even know how
it's pronounced.
We'll find out. Yeah.
But that's your guy. That's your culture guy, right?
Yep.
You know, it kind of reminds me of Sean Miller last year, of like, no, we recruited the whole family. We're close to the family. We're close to, you know, this is the kind of guy we're looking for in this program. You know, where they're just, you know, it reminds me of Underwood and his certain obsessions with certain recruits of like, no, Drew Timmy is the number one target for us in this class, kind of, you know, 2019 class or whatever. Because that's the exact guy I can win with, kind of thing. You know, that this, it seems to be this very culture-focused thing where it's not the way Michigan State goes about the portal, and it's not the way, you know, other programs go about recruiting. It's the very, very specific kind of recruit that they feel they can build around.
Yep.
Okay, so let's switch back and talk Chase Brown. Like how I mean, I've proven on Twitter today how mad I was. How mad were you?
Yeah. So I was pretty pissed off. And the thing that I think about, like, and this might not be a popular opinion, I actually don't think our offensive line is that good. And, like that so and you know, not to take anything away from any individual on the offensive line or anything like that, but like I've heard, you know, you hear Bielema a bit in bits and pieces talk about how, like, you know, Purdue gets the ball out second quickest, and we're the quickest, right? And like he knew that off the top of his head, like we have to be the quickest. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, is that just a backhanded way of saying like you don't trust the offensive line to pass block? So to me, whenever you get Chase Brown, like, you saw the difference, and not to take away from the Northwestern game where Reggie Love looked great, but like you saw the difference between Chase and Reggie Love.
Yes.
And you see the difference even in the bits and pieces we saw Josh McCray this year, and granted he was banged up, but like you saw the difference between Chase Brown and Josh McCray. You look at like Quorum. I mean, there were people tweeting during that Ohio State game about how Michigan's offensive line is like the closest thing to an NFL offensive line they've ever seen in the college game.
Right. Three of their offensive linemen with first team All Big Ten today.
Exactly. And then you have, I mean, the backup there is maybe better than him. Like, I'm not convinced he's not better than him.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, yes, he scored a lot of touchdowns. Yes, he ran behind one of the best offensive lines, like, I mean, literally the best offensive line in the country last year, maybe the best offensive line in the country this year. And you're not going to give it to a guy who was, you know, like you see the MVP arguments and it's like, well, like he had other good players around him. And if you take him off the team, you know, like all of that, mm-hmm. like in baseball and every sport, you take Chase Brown off of this offense and like, how many points a game are we putting up?
Yep.
I mean, legitimately a guy who is directly responsible for, like, his, what would his war be in football?
Yes. Yes.
You
yes.
know, I mean, that's
it's what, like it's what I was trying. I'm not trying to get to war, but the little stat I made up yesterday, where I just, you know, I went through the top 10 and I listed out, I mean, I have a notepad over here. It's like 3 pages deep on a legal pad of writing down, like, it took me 4 hours to come up with this stat yesterday, where I just looked at the average rushing yards allowed by the defenses faced by each one of these guys in the top 10 nationally in rushing. And the defenses we faced were hands down better than Michigan, better than any other tailback listed on this list had to face by a significant amount. Chase had to face the best rushing defenses of any player in that top 10. Then I went on to the top 20, top 30, and I just did this cursory, like, because I had been digging so deep in who were the top defenses, I just went by like team and I'd go to their schedule and who'd they play. There's no one close. So I'm comfortable in saying what Chase Brown did is he led the country in rushing yards while playing the most difficult defenses of any other tailback in the top 30. And yep. for him to do that and put up these numbers, and we watched all the games. I was at all 12 games. Like, I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that he was the most valuable player in all of the Big Ten, without question. Replace Stroud at Ohio State with another quarterback. Replace, okay, you know, like, you know, Marvin Harrison Jr., okay, maybe he's the the all-star of the Big Ten or whatever. Like, he's the best pro prospect. You know, he's going to make 9 Pro Bowls. But he was the lead guy because, you know, JSN, the Jackson Smith thing, but he's injured most of the season. And so they just turn to their other superstar and, you know, throw the ball to him. Like, Illinois can't do that, okay? Illinois can't ever do that. And because of that, to say that the guy who impacted the Big Ten more than any other single player in the country, in the conference, is not a first team, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. He is the most impactful player in the entire conference, hands down.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, it to me, like, this was the final nail in the coffin just in how ridiculous some of these lists are.
Yep.
You know, I mean, even Devin Witherspoon not winning Big Ten Defense Player of the Year pisses me off too. I mean, I could spend 20 minutes on that, but it's just, it goes back to, you win one or two more games, Chase Brown's probably on the list, but we didn't lose those games because of Chase Brown.
Yep.
I mean, it was like the only reason we were in those games was because of Chase Brown.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, if you put together a war, he is off the charts, and he is so, like, the other thing I guess that blows my mind is, like, a lot of times the writers and the coaches, like, fall in love with the NFL prospect. You know, like the Harrison over the Charlie Jones. But the Corum thing is interesting because, like, he's not even really an NFL prospect, or at least, like, a high, high NFL prospect, right? Like, I have not seen him on. He's not he's not that guy. And so, yeah, I mean, it's just, I guess he played for a better team, and that's of it. Or he played one more games.
Yep. And I guess, you know, in a sense, this is always going to how the world's going to work. It's always going to, you know, it's last night after I tweeted that stat I made up of, like, okay, what, here's the average rushing yards allowed by the 12 opponents. How close did this single back get to matching that number? And Chase was 98% of that number. No one else was even close, as like 84%. You know, he by himself carried this team. And so Marley, who used to work at WCIA, she now works in Grand Rapids at a TV station. She retweeted it. One of the guys, I think, at that station saw it, and he's all up in my mentions of, like, here's what you're ignoring yards per carry, and Corum did this, and if he wasn't injured, he would have had, and, you know. And I have the full realization that me, Mr. Argue for Illinois, is going to run up against hundreds of Blake Corum defenders doing the same thing I'm doing, cherry picking stats to make your guy look the best. And it's just this realization that, like, look, that machine is always going to outperform this machine. It just is.
Yep.
You know, it's just always going to work like that. And to say that those girls aren't going to make the cheerleading squad and the girl who really should have made it, you know, it's just, it's always going to be like that. Okay.
Yep.
It's just that the popular girl is the head cheerleader, and she's just going to get that spot, and that's how the machine works. And so, you know, I feel sometimes silly making these defenses, but I just, I don't know, maybe I'm inspired by Bielma getting really noisy about the officiating, but I just can't let it go of, you know, not, this is not some, oh man, we're screwed, everybody hates Illinois. This is a look, there was no more valuable player to carry a team than this one guy. And
I have I have zero doubt in my mind if you put Chase Brown on Michigan, he would have run for 1,600 or 1,700 yards.
Oh, yes.
I have zero doubt in my mind if you put Blake Corum on Illinois, he does not run for 1,600 yards.
Yes.
And, you know, at the end of the day, maybe that's, you know, that's only one piece of it, sure. But, like, there is zero doubt in my mind Chase Brown is the better player who had the better season, who was in an offense that was completely one-dimensional for the better part of the year, where, I mean, he was at the top of every single scouting report, and it wasn't, you know, if Blake Corum goes off the field, there's another guy stepping in who is every bit as much of a threat to a defense as Blake Corum is. If Chase Brown steps off the field, like, the defense just, like, has a sigh of relief. And that is no mm-hmm. diss to any of our backup tailbacks or anything mm-hmm. like that. Like, he is just on another level.
Yep.
So.
Okay. Well, we'll let that go. Okay, we're over an hour now, so we probably should wrap this up at some point. But your overall feeling of where Illinois football stands. I mean, again, last year we determined it was the seventh best season. You know, so we probably had like the seventh best and maybe the third best seasons of our lifetime kind of thing here, all happening in two years. So, you know, you're an insane Illinois football fan. I'm curious where you stand on, you know, where this thing goes from here.
Yeah. So, I mean, it sounds cliche, but I mean, it feels like a huge off season with, like, you know, the Walters kind of up in the air, like, where, you know, if he'll be back. There's a lot of turnover, going to be a lot of roster turnover. And I go back to the, like, you just want to avoid the cliff or the cliff, you know, like, we've hit the peak.
Yep.
Avoid the cliff. Avoid that, like, massive step back that Illinois fans have seen every, you know, after every season like this.
Yep.
Seasons one and season two, there were big steps back. This is season three, the third best season of our lifetime. Avoid the big step back. And I am more confident that we will this year than I have been in years past, than in seasons one and season two, I think. And maybe that's just, you know, the ability to play like Monday morning quarterback, but it feels like, kind of for all the reasons we talked about, like, we are in a place where we can sustain some success. And like, I was surprised, like, week after week of just like how competent we were and how, like, much some of these guys who we saw as struggling freshmen and struggling sophomores and even struggling juniors. You think about like a Calvin Avery, and it's just like you see him dominate stretches of games against some of the best offensive lines in the Big Ten. And you're just like, mm-hmm. like, what happened to this guy? Mm-hmm. And you see it across the board. Mm-hmm. And so it's so much different. Like 2007, we won because we had the best running back in the Big Ten, one of the best running backs in the nation. We had the most talented cornerback in arguably the country. We had, you know, I mean, all of mm-hmm. these things where we just out-talented everyone. And that was kind of how we won those close games. And, like, I don't think that's necessarily the case. I'm not saying we don't have talent, but, like, the development and, like, just the culture, the discipline that, the team has shown, it just feels totally different. It's like we're winning in a different way, and it feels far more sustainable. So I am fired up, and, I mean, next year will be – I'm like, I wish it was August again.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like, I mean, it could be as simple as this is just Makovic again. You know, like, if you look at the history of Illinois football, you know, it's up and then back down and up and back down and up and back down. You know, even Mike White, I have the year by year schedule here. You know, Mike White went 3-7-7-10, 7-6-4-3. You know, it's very similar to the Ron Turner. I'm just listing wins over the season. 0-3-8-5-10, 5-1-3 fired. You know, mm-hmm. Zook, 2-2-9-5-3, then the 2-6-6 seasons and fired. You know, but Makovic, if you're looking at this list, 6 wins in the All-American Bowl, then 10 wins in the Citrus Bowl, then 8 wins in the Hall of Fame Bowl, then 6-6 before he went off to Texas. And you know, 4 bowls in 4 years and just sustainable, I know how to build a football program kind of thing. And so that's kind of what this feels like to me, is like, wait, no, this is competent staff. You know, look, Makovic went 6-6 in his 4th season. You know, everybody's going to have these down, you know, Barry Alvarez built Wisconsin, and every now and then he'd have a 6-6 or a 5-7 and tweak some things and be right back there the next year. That's what this feels like. It just feels like this is a sustainable thing of people who know what they're doing.
Is this what it feels like? I mean,
maybe I should like get a guest on of like, hey, you've been around winning football.
Like? Yeah. I hope to God this is what it feels like. But from my, I mean, I'm with you. It feels different. It feels like the floor is so much higher than it's ever been. And it just feels like I have more confidence in Bielema as a college football coach than anyone, you know. I mean, really, probably dating back to as long as I can remember.
Yep. I mean, since I have this open, I'll just say it, okay? Lou Tepper takes over a program that's in a really good spot. I've always said, 1992, when Tepper took over, you know, Iowa was in a bit of a funk. Michigan State was in a funk. You know, like there were questions all around. You know, if Indiana was coming off their best little peak in the late 80s, but Northwestern was nothing, and Wisconsin had been 30 years of losing and everything else. So we were in a good spot behind Ohio State and Michigan, and really, at the time with John Cooper, we were neck and neck. You know, we won 5 in a row over Ohio State, okay? Like, things were in good shape, and then we all know what happened. It fell apart. And so then let's list the Big Ten wins in the first 2 years for the next set of coaches. Ron Turner won 2 Big Ten games in the first 2 years. Ron Zook won 1 Big Ten game in the first 2 years. Tim Beckman won 1 Big Ten game in the first 2 years. Lovie Smith won 2 Big Ten games in the first 2 years. Brett Bielema won 9 Big Ten games in the first 2 years. It's that simple, right? Yeah. It's that simple. It has to be that simple.
And how many of those losses were one score losses? Because even last year.
Okay, now we got to do this.
Yeah.
Okay, even one score losses last year, because I know Maryland was. Hold on.
Purdue was.
Are we doing only Big Ten?
Only Big Ten.
Okay.
Purdue was a one score loss.
Yep.
Wisconsin was not. Rutgers was. And Iowa was not.
Are you going through your brain? Iowa should have been, except for the pick six. Okay, Big Ten games, one score losses. We're just going to count them up. Maryland, 1. Purdue, 2. Rutgers, 3. Iowa was not. And then we won the other 4. Oh, and we won Nebraska, yes. So we won the rest of them. So what did I just say, 3?
3.
Okay. So then we go to this year. And the one score losses, 1, 2, 3, 4. So what you're saying here, Bob, is that Brett Bielema was 9-9 in the Big Ten with 7 one score losses?
Is that right? I thought.
Hold on.
I think it's all but one game, right?
No, it's both Iowa and Wisconsin. Wisconsin was
24-0. Iowa and Wisconsin. Yep.
Yes. But yeah. Iowa was 33-23, and we were driving, but they picked it off and ran it in for a touchdown to get to 33. So, you know, it was, it should have been a one score game, but we threw a pick six. Yeah. 9-9, 7-1 score losses, that Iowa game we just described, and the Wisconsin game, which was a drubbing, you know, 24-0.
Yep.
But, you know, kind of saw that coming with as good as that Wisconsin defense was and as bad as that offense was struggling mid-season. Before they switched to Barge and, you know, made things different at the Penn State game. So,
totally.
Yeah, that's what we're saying. 9-9 in the Big Ten, 7-1 score games, a 10-point loss to Iowa, and the Wisconsin blowout, 24-0.
Yep.
That is unbelievable. Okay. I can't end like this because now we just need to go back. Okay.
We got to go back. That's exactly what I was going to do. Yeah.
Okay. 2020, we lost the opener to Wisconsin by 38. Then we lost to Purdue by a touchdown. There's a one score loss. Then we lost to Minnesota 41-14. We won those two games against Rutgers and Nebraska. The Ohio State got canceled. We lost to Iowa by 14. We lost to Northwestern by 18. And then we lost 56-21 to Penn State. Losses, the Big Ten losses in 2019. We lost to Nebraska in that 700-yard game, 42-38. So that's a one-score loss. We got blown out at Minnesota 40-17, lost to Michigan 42-25 in the Matt Robinson comeback game. Then we won those four in a row. Then we lost to Iowa by 9, lost to Northwestern by 19, and lost the bowl game. 2018, let's see, were there some bad losses in 2018? Oh, that's right. Lost to Penn State 63-24. Lost to Purdue 46-7. Lost to Wisconsin 49-20. Lost to Maryland 63-33. Lost to Nebraska 54-35. Lost to Iowa 63-0. And then finally played a one-score game against Northwestern where we lost by 8.
Wow. We're going to have to crunch these numbers, I feel like, at some point.
Even I'll just do one more. I'll do one more.
Let's go all the way back to the beginning.
2017. Lost to Nebraska 28-6. Lost at Iowa 45-16. Lost to Rutgers 35-24. One score game. Lost to Minnesota 24-17. Lost to Wisconsin 24-10. Lost to Purdue 29-10. Lost to Indiana 24-14. Lost to Ohio State 52-14. Lost to Northwestern 42-7. Okay, one more. In 2016, lost to Nebraska 31-16, then a one-score game, lost to Purdue in overtime. That was the Chase McLaughlin doink off the upright, I believe, is why we went to overtime with Purdue and we lost in overtime. Lost to Michigan 41-8, lost to Minnesota 40-17, lost to Wisconsin 48-3. Lost to Iowa 28-0. Lost to Northwestern 42-21. I mean, to take all of those numbers together and then say in his first 18 Big Ten games, Brett Bielema has won 9, lost 9, and of those 9 losses, 7 were one score games is insanity.
It's insanity.
I don't even know how to. In the last two years, we have watched one Big Ten game where we were out of it in the fourth quarter.
Yeah,
one. After watching Beckman and Lovey, it would be 80% of the games were out of it in the fourth quarter.
I would say at a minimum
from 2012 to 2019.
if you go 2016 on, like we just ran through those, how many of those losses were actually one score games? We're going to have to do the math at some point and come up with some sort of percentage.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that was insanity. And those weren't even like, I mean, those were 8-point losses when they were 1-point game or one possession games.
God, in my brain. But those were like, in my brain, I'm sitting here going through, like, I want to go back to 2017 me when I'm writing all those. Look, there are going to be 25 bad games. There just are. But then Lovey's going to turn around. He's going to win 18 of the next 31 games after Maryland in 2018. I just want to go kick that guy. I just want to go shove him in a hole. Because really, it was this simple, right? It was this simple. It was competence, turn over the roster, find a culture, build it, build around these players. Take the same players that were doing the other stuff and have them doing this stuff in their junior and senior years.
Is this what it feels like?
I think this is what it feels like. I think we need to end right here because this is the feeling we've wanted for 25 years.
That's right.
All right, let's seriously wrap it up right here. I gotta go to sleep.
That's right.
You gotta go to sleep.
All right. Thanks for having me.
This was good, man. Yeah. This is what it feels like.
That's right.
This.
Talk to you soon.
Is what it feels like. Go Illini.